This week on RSBNB Update, Maude Warden joins us for a chat about his first year as executive producer, microtransactions, and the future for 2021 and beyond. Plus, we look at what Steam means for RuneScape, the removal of loot boxes, and the possibility of modding RuneScape. This is RSBNB Update, episode 797, The Warden of RuneScape. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. Normally, these weeks, it's just Hannes and myself, but as you probably gathered from our promotion material that we've done this week, it's not any ordinary week here at Update. This week, we have Maude Warden, RuneScape's executive producer, joining us, and we're going to talk about a lot of fun things, so welcome aboard, Maude Warden.
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, we're just gonna dive through this. We're gonna talk a bit about the strategic vision of RuneScape, what it looks like 5, maybe even 20 years out. We're gonna get to know you a bit, and of course, we're gonna talk about your first year as executive producer. But of course, that's all getting ahead of ourselves. I am Shane12088 in game. Tannis, you're here as you are each and every week as well. Welcome back.
Thank you, Shane.
And you can be found at Tannis79. In-game. And for anybody who wants full show notes on this episode, you can find those at update.rsbnb.com. You can get the full rundown of everything we're going to talk about in this about hour or so chat with Maude Warden here. So, Maude Warden, what is one thing about you, the guy, Maude Warden, that the RuneScape community should know if they don't already know?
That's a good question. I'd say I try to be a very genuine individual. Maybe it doesn't always come off that way, but I try and strive for that. But I would say that I'm pretty sentimental overall, but I'm also a hard ass. So that I think that's where some of the kind of grit and determination and persistent elements kind of come into play. But I just try and be real. And I'm a total goofball behind the scenes. I'm the dad joke kind of guy, cheesy, corny jokes, and I'm okay with that. I'm comfortable in my shoes there.
Yeah, we like that kind of thing, and you know, we were able to tell that even just bantering with you a bit in pre-show here too. So that's something that we can definitely appreciate. And you know, one thing that I really appreciated that you guys as a studio are taking up are the tea break live streams, and that is something that everybody hopefully has listened to by this point. That you had a tea break live stream with Maude Hooley where you went through a whole bunch of stuff, getting to know yourself, the fact you're from the prairies in Canada as well, and you know, anybody from the prairies I've found always has that grit and determination around you as well. But we're going to expand on that a bit, and we have a bit of a quickfire round here for quickfire questions and answers. So I'm just going to rattle some of these off right now. Favorite sports team?
Oh, Winnipeg Jets, ice hockey, right?
Yeah.
Love ice hockey. My boys played hockey. I didn't play hockey growing up. My parents kind of kept me away from them, and kind of wish they didn't. But I got to live vicariously through my kids. My son's been a goalie; he's taking a little bit of a break right now. But Winnipeg Jets, and I'm glad that they're back.
Yeah, we'll definitely hope that those Jets have another playoff run next year. It was fun watching that this year. Favorite pizza?
Oh yeah, people will think that ham and pineapple might be my thing. Well, I love ham and pineapple. It's definitely pepperoni mushroom all the way. I kind of do a veg and a meat. Just that's kind of like my litmus test on what pizza is. And mushrooms are something I hated as a kid and love as an adult. But that's the baseline for me.
Interesting. That's something I've never been able to get over, mushrooms on a pizza. But that's a topic for a different day, of course. Tannis, how do you feel about mushrooms on pizza?
I'm cool with it. I mean, I'm cool with it. Yeah, it's not my favorite. But...
All right. Favorite quote?
One of the things I really, really love is the idea of virtual worlds. And one of the things I've liked in that area was a quote from an artist. His name is Alberto Giacometti, and he was a sculptor. And he once said that the object of art is not to reproduce reality, but to create a reality of the same intensity. And I kind of look at virtual worlds in that same space and how we kind of replicate some of our humanity and human elements in the space of escape and fantasy. So that's I like that a lot.
All right. Favorite color. And this is, you know, something that I think is fairly telling about a person. And everybody's got their favorite color and a story behind it. So what's your favorite color?
Let's see. I've liked green a lot. But I would probably say is, you know, as I get older and more out of shape, black also kind of hides the shape a little bit. So that's a more of an older guy thing. I'd probably say I like blues. I've never been a big red t-shirt or purple shirt kind of dude. But I've been kind of trying to go out of my element and try that out a little more. So you might see a little more reds and purples.
Neat. All right. And, you know, you mentioned virtual worlds, and that's, of course, what we're here to talk about, RuneScape. And for those unaware, what exactly is an executive producer and what do you do?
Yeah, it depends on where you're at. But where I'm at right now with Jagex, this means that I'm the business leader for RuneScape, that I'm responsible for the development of all of RuneScape. I also have other responsibilities like P&L, business term, profit and loss. So I'm always looking at the commercial side of our business, commercial viability, the profitability, managing costs with that, making sure I've got budget and developing a budget year to year for it so I can keep making the game. That's a big piece of it. Another aspect of it is building teams and leaders. And so really looking at the people side of what we have and how we need to grow them. And not just that, but how we staff against our initiatives. And then there's a lot of the creative elements that I provide a lot of input on, but I have other people that are better fitted for that in the areas of expertise. But I've got to kind of push in each of these areas as well. And really just kind of sum it up, I like to say it's the person most responsible for RuneScape at the end of the day. And where I report into, I report into a head of all product at Jagex. Maybe one day we'll get him on a live stream. He's a really cool guy.
His name is
Nick Belayev. And it's like super, super industry vet. And it's just really keen on working for him. And Nick reports into Phil, our CEO.
Mod Pips. Yeah.
Mod Pips, yes.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that'd be fun to do because when it comes down to it at the end of the day, I think for many people, it's just this organization that puts out a game, but not many people know how it works behind the scenes. So that's very good to hear. And, you know, this is something that we've been following for years in terms of how Jagex works, whether that be with promises or the content that's going to come out or the monetization model with that. And, you know, we hear big promises each year, year after year. And, you know, many people are wondering with you, why should they expect anything different this time around?
Yeah, it's you know, one of the first things I learned about RuneScape, and you might have heard me say this, is I was kind of taking a look at our batting average and just like the things that we say and how we back it up and give me the reasons to believe. And that usually comes in the form of delivery into the game, right? So maybe the way I try to look at things a little more pragmatically is that I want to deliver on promises. I want the team to feel great about the work that they're putting out there. And I want and hopefully that we get the feedback from the players in the way that it was intended. So I'd probably say it's just I wanna you know, if I want to be known for delivering on promise and quality, that would be the bigger things I like to believe that I can bring to the team. But with that comes just a lot of outside knowledge about making games. You know, I don't want to crap all over any past contributors to the team or anything like that. But I have a really wide range of experience that I leverage and tap into. And not only that, it's like I've got a peer community that I've developed over the years.
Right.
And you know, I reach out to them. I ask for advice. I try and get the lay of the land a little bit and kind of continue bringing that stuff into the day to day. And the other part of it, I try and be ambitious, and that's one of the areas we haven't really shown a lot in just yet, and that it takes a long time to kind of build up when you're trying to build trust and credibility. But I want a good relationship with the community. I hope that people will trust me over time, and that they see that we're trying to follow through with more things than ever.
Yeah, and you know, following on from that, I think, Tan, as we've said, we've noticed this before, that when it comes to Jagex, there has always been the question of, yes, we can capture that lightning here and there, but is there going to be the follow-through going forward in being able to deliver these updates on a consistent, regular basis, which is something that has been hit or miss before, in my opinion. I think we've gone on that path, right, Tanis?
Yes, well, and there's the added thing of when they do capture that lightning in a bottle, for some reason, sometimes it seems like there's a course correction after that, and it goes a different way. And you're going, and as a player, you don't know the behind the scenes. You don't know the conversations that were had, and you're going, I don't understand what happened. I thought that was good.
Yeah, it's really, you know, it's really, really hard making games. It's hard to be like in the most amazing position all the time, right? And for forever. So, you know, there'll always be ups and downs. I try and look at, you know, what is making a game kind of remind me of? And I kind of draw a little bit of an analogy with how the 777 Dreamliner was made, right?
Interesting.
It was kind of like the plane that was distributed everywhere, right? You had I think the wings were made in Austin, and you had engines that were made in Seattle, and all these parts were just made by different brains, different teams, even different product visions, right? And then one day they all kind of had to magically all perfectly fit together, and then a pilot had to hop in the plane and fly it and right out of the gate trust that it is going to work, right? And there's a lot of challenges with that kind of project. There are so many details that are part of making games, and you know, to do a pivot, it's incredibly hard to kind of replan or come up with a new idea or try and react to a new bit of information. All these things that come in our day-to-day are incredibly hard. And then it's kind of like combining the creative with the technical, with the business, the community, the social, and then even kind of building out into the other areas of the business. I work with lawyers. I work with HR people. I work with a lot of different elements in a company, and it takes so many elements to try and make a game or even just put out a weekly piece of content, right? And it's way more harder than I could possibly imagine, and it's even harder to try and get it right.
Yeah, I think that's something the players often just take for granted on that. And you know, you've been around at Jagex for 1 year now as the executive producer, and quite honestly, I think it's safe to say that literally nobody, anticipated the situation we're currently in. So, go ahead.
Yeah, that's totally correct. It's like, yeah, we would have not have even tried to see like, you know, we weren't set up to work in the best way remotely. It just wasn't our development culture. So we went from an area where we were functioning as a on-site business. In a matter of days and weeks, we became a distributed development company. And yeah, we work with outsourcers and we work with partners and you know, people remote in occasionally, but we had no idea what we're kind of getting ourselves into, and never mind, you know, releasing archaeology into a totally different yeah. world. And you know, this is a, it was, you know, it's a weird perfect storm in some ways that we actually had something we could give players that were also looking for escape, trying to figure yeah. life out.
It definitely hit that spot. And, you know, if you look back to last September or October, and, you know, barring the whole COVID situation, what would you say you were hoping, the biggest thing you were hoping to accomplish in your first year?
Yeah, first year was about just kind of really getting to know the lay of the land. And within that and kind of bringing out product, I definitely wanted to kind of continue with the plan that we were going with kind of like bigger tent poles, really kind of big moments that were in the pipeline.
Right.
And then it's kind of also looking at the laying of the land and adjusting to the reality of our production capability and shifting gears and trying to provide a place to relax and escape. Right. It's just that wasn't feasible. But in a lot of ways too, you know, it's like I was always, you know, trying to listen to both needs and also what the team wanted to work on. It became more apparent that we needed to release content more frequently, and that we wanted to also have a plan that comprised of smaller, medium, and larger moments, and so on. And it's just that everything just took longer to do, right?
Yeah.
So we were probably more on track of having a couple big moments throughout the course of 2020, and where we've now changed to is having frequent smaller to medium moments, and the areas that I want to kind of build into, and we'll, you know, hopefully get to chat about this a little later, is what is that kind of longer term content vision look like, right?
Yeah, we definitely will.
Yeah, but overall, like I also wanted to establish some predictability, and other areas of the predictability that we put in things like the yak tracks, right? This was something we were kind of dabbling with prior to me joining. It was, you know, was part of like about a year prior, I guess it's been almost 2 years now. It was part of the Premier Club offering. Yep. And the Premier Pass, right? And it's like, kind of seeing what you're trying to do there and what you're trying to play with, but it wasn't really adding a lot to us. And then last fall came out with our new Premier Club offering, and this became more of a thing. And then we were kind of talking, well, why don't we just make this happen on a regular basis, every 4 to 6 weeks even, right? And that we can plan for, we can develop and iterate, and it's now a thing. And so that was, I would say, something that we was really important to us, and trying to string little more narrative bits into what we're doing.
Yes. Yes.
Was really important, and I think we kind of nailed it a little yeah. bit with the last yak track, right?
I started moving through the first few tasks, and you know, just this was discussed on last week's episode, of course, with the lore. But geesh, I mean, I wasn't expecting that kind of quality of lore from something that many people refer to as a microtransaction event, even though it's technically a time limited event on that front.
I didn't expect it either.
Yeah,
and it was awesome, wasn't it?
And again, these things don't change overnight, right? Like,
yeah.
Like it wasn't like all of a sudden like a yak track or two that ago that we said, hey, the community's demanding more lore. It's like, no, actually, it was just going to take us this long to kind of get this worked out. Like, we didn't have a lot of processes for this, and we had a lot of different ways of working. We're working differently than ever. It's like one of the things I asked the team to do is work on developing a creative brief, a narrative brief. Everything needs to be that we bring in a world, even it has a commercial component to it, should be grounded in the lore. We have to, it has to feel like it belongs more and more in some way. Right. And
part of the world building, if you will.
That's right. And you know, it's like we got some archaic pipelines and tools to work with, and it just doesn't happen when you want it to happen, right? Unfortunately.
Yeah.
But we got it to the spot, and I think you'll see more of this style of Yak Track move moving forward. It's, you know, taking info from like the grindy bits and trying to think about new gameplay as well as it's part of that.
Yeah, and whenever a Yak Track comes out, one of the things that I appreciate about it is it gives me a break from whatever I'm currently working on in game, and it diversifies my gameplay. It effectively guides me for, you know, those 4 or 5 weeks that it takes to complete it, and that's something I appreciate with it. And, you know, looking at all of this in terms of this first year, you've obviously made changes that we're starting to see on the surface here, but are there any changes that you've made internally that have benefited players that we might not be aware of yet that you can talk about?
Well, I kind of look at what we're trying to do. I think we've got a little bit of a new car motor in place at the moment. And it's really, you know, we've got a motor going, and then the car is moving, I think, in a pretty good direction. And why I would say, why do I think it's good? Well, this past week, I started seeing a couple new posts emerge in the community where it's like, actually, we have players now defending our content strategy. This is kind of a cool moment. Yeah, we get other players that still don't like it or wish we'd do other things too, but I think we're doing something more right. And the other thing is I get to see all the data, right? We move more in the direction on things that are backed up by data and where we're seeing the positive outcomes of engagement. So we look at the broad reach and the utilization of things and so on. So we're definitely a data-driven shop. And then we've also been trying to experiment within that and try some new things. And these are the pieces that you don't always get to see or what they kind of turn into. Let's see. I'll try to answer your question a little more directly. It's like what maybe players don't get to see. One of the other elements is the effort that actually goes into the ninja and quality of life planning.
That's actually a very good topic to talk about on this.
Yeah,
because that's something that has changed in the last year.
Yeah, and like this wasn't an idea that was brought by me joining the company, but it's like it was, and it was something that really wasn't running when I joined either. Like, or just kind of operated at a different pace. It was being addressed differently, right? So I was kind of looking at, it's like we put out 50 releases in the course of the year, right? Week after week, and we have a little bit of a slowdown around Christmas and how we transition into the new year. And it's just kind of like going back the release note after release note, just kind of years of news posts. And it's like, wow, you know, we don't really talk about some of the things that we could be talking about, and it wouldn't be hard for us to kind of reframe it or maybe even can market it differently. Like you start seeing that we've got key art and we've got a ninja brand, right? This was we hired a fantastic head of product marketing. We brought from outside of the industry as well. He was working on PUBG.
Interesting.
And history and Sega. And this his name's David, and David's been just really kind of leveling us up, pushing our content. Sitting and working with the devs and listen to the devs, how they talk about, we call them USPs, another business term, universal selling points. Like these are things that we try and extract in conversation and kind of turn them into beats and narrative and so on. And David's been his expertise is just like really well-grounded, really, really fun, sits with the devs. When we were all in the office, we all kind of sat together. So it's not like, hey, you publishing marketing guys are over there. No, he's embedded in the RuneScape.
Now they're embedded. And you see that because, you know, one of the night and day ninja strikes that I see personally was the Shattered Worlds ninja strike, because that update when it came out was one that made me and it made you, Tanis, it made us claw our eyes out just because the quality wasn't there when it first launched. But then this ninja strike, you could see the potential, but this ninja strike brings it forward.
That's right. And so I'll give you a little story on that, right? I talked about building up, trying to build up some credibility. So when I landed in the team, it was just before farming an Herblore.
Right.
I just coming off the back of RuneFest, you know, we had a bunch of RuneFest announcements, and to be honest, like all of that was like flying by me. I had no context for any of this at this point, right?
Because you'd only been in the company about a month or so when RuneFest hit, right?
Yeah, that's about right, because it was October. So yeah, it was about a month at that point, and so yeah, coming into farming an Herblore, and it was about it's like, hey, we're pretty close with this, but we got to push a little harder to get it out, because we actually gave a time frame for farming an Herblore. We said it was going to be November. So it's like, what can we do for it to be in November? And would we stretching on the quality front or compromising quality in any way if we pushed a little harder and trying to get it out the door? So we're kind of faced on some timing. And I thought, okay, it's in a decent spot. And it's important for us to deliver this, because we said it was going to be November. So then the next bit was a timing or taking a look at archaeology, right? And obviously, I before even kind of getting right on top of the release, it's like, okay, I'm going to get ahead of this one, because I partake in the sprint reviews. I listen to the feedback from the team. You kind of look for little tells on it. It's like, right. Yeah, sort of happy, not
and I,
happy.
And I'm guessing what you're getting at here is the delay from January to March.
Exactly. The delay from January to March. And it's like, okay, yeah, we could have thrown out the door, but there is just the number of vectors of things needing to be addressed, or whether it was QA work or some polish time. Like, I would say the bulk of the development was done, and it wasn't in a horrible place. It was actually in a great place, but there was just that much more that we could do. And I really also wanted to make a dent on the bug and QA side of things. I think we've had a really challenge history on allowing things to go at the door, where we could just, you know, another week or two of testing or another month of testing really go a long way. So I wanted to find more bugs before players could find them. And you still don't get it right. Right. So we're now in this crossroads. So it's interesting that you bring up things like Shadow Worlds. That was a great release, but we had War's Retreat, right?
Yeah.
And so we were also kind of looking at, man, you know, it's like, what can tide us over? And this is where War's Retreat came in, okay, into the picture and part of the story.
Right, because I remember that shift from talking about, as it was called, PVM Hub as an idea, to the point, okay, we're developing this and it's going to come out before archaeology.
Exactly. And we had some game jam projects. Like, we're also trying to find better ways to work more creatively in our day-to-day, have some prototyping time rather than just like, push out content, aggressive schedule, boom, 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 right? It's hard and fast in our day-to-day. But we had done a summer game jam, and one of the projects that some of the team members worked on was War's Retreat. So that was a little bit of a, hey, this is actually a good idea. The community responded well to it. We can put this out there, buys us a little bit of time, and it's good piece of content. And then now we're in the territory of quality of life being a thing. And this is where I learned about the history of Ninja, and how we've addressed quality of life, right? And this, as I'm learning about the release notes and the history of the game, it's like, you know what? This is where we should focus next. So it was getting a new dedicated team. I shifted some resources around on some of our delivery to address quality of life. Again, this is a trust-building exercise. And I really like a lot of the things that we had backlogs for this built up over the years.
I can imagine.
And then just seeing like all the discussions that happen all the time and little loose ends here and there. And we also had a history of not going back to past releases that we had worked on and kind of move on the next thing, just different strategies over the years. And so so now it's like, hey, Ninja's got traction. Great. We were kind of probably at a, you know, maybe a 4 or 5 week delivery time. And then we brought it down to 3 weeks. And then it's like, hey, if I brought a couple more resources here, could we do this every 2 weeks? So that's kind of like where we are today with Ninja. And the team's done a bang-up job. I think also opening up the dojo to the community has been like almost overwhelming, right?
Just and I mean, they had to shut it down, and they're still shut down on that, sifting through all that.
Oh, gosh, yeah. And it's like we're going through the very early phases of 2021 roadmap planning, and it's like Ninja team's planning out a whole year already, and this is a big change. So this kind of leads me in a little other area, which is one of the biggest things was trying to get a longer term outlook for what we're making and what we could possibly make.
Yeah, and so, we're definitely want to talk about that, because that is something that, we go back, you have the 5-year skilling plan idea. It has just been a question of, is there a vision behind the faces that's driving RuneScape? And, it's been a question that hopefully we'll have an answer to by the end of this podcast. And you actually answered my next question here on this, because I was going to ask, was there a decision that you made behind the scenes that made, say, 120 farming or herbal or archaeology better? And you just answered that in relation to the extra QA testing that was done with archaeology and extra polish work, as it was.
Yeah, so. it's a lot of little things at the end of the day, right? They're kind of like the way I work, like, I'm not a heavy-fisted guy where it's like, this is the thing I want to see in the game. That's not how you make a game, right? You look to your team to provide solutions to things that you think would provide value to players, right?
Right.
And so it's more about influence and steering rather than dictating.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you just kind of get fed up with certain things. Like, guys, I kind of asked for this thing. I think it's really big and important that we do this thing. I'm going to be a little more heavier-handed on this. And it's like, please, let's just do this thing. But those are fewer and far between.
All right. And, talking about things that are harder to do in that case, and, when it comes to the pandemic, that's been hard for everybody. Aside from that, and, because I said, what's the hardest thing you've had to overcome in your first year, Mod Warden? You would say probably the pandemic. So I'm going to say, discounting that, what's the hardest thing that you've had to overcome in your first year?
Yeah, it's just really trying to address sentiment overall, right? And this is part of getting to know a community of players. The biggest thing is, and then with that is bringing some credibility. I think we're making some good headway on that. In the more specific areas on our commercial activities or MTX and Treasure Hunter and Loot Box. Controversies that pop up, right? I landed right in the middle of that, and taking a look at that strategy as well was it's like I had to address that really, really quickly.
And folks, don't worry, we will be discussing that in just a short while here.
There you go.
So, given everything in this first year, hardest thing to overcome, sentiment. And, Tannis, we see this each and every week, player sentiment in relation to the updates and whatnot. And, I got to give credit to Tannis here, because I think it was in one of the live streams in May or June you came on, and Tannis messages me after watching the live stream, and he says, I think we're shifting back to regular content now. And you nailed that on the head, Tannis. That was pretty well done on that front. And I think it all comes from the direction of this first year on that. So given the hand you've been dealt, Mod Warden, what was your biggest accomplishment over the year?
Gosh, you're thinking now, you're getting me thinking ahead of performance review times. I think I think we've got a good content vision in place that is really becoming a pillar in our day-to-day conversation, bring more predictability into what we're doing. But I also want to keep injecting that with some surprises along the way, or maybe I think of them as surprises, or the team thinks of them as surprises. I don't want to put all of the cards on the table at the all-in-one go. I've seen some of the history with RuneScape where all the cards are put on the table and maybe, you know, 10, 20, 30% of it's accomplished in some years and maybe better in other years.
Or the four-year progress that it took to get the mining and smithing rework done.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's right. And so I think it's really more about just establishing a dialogue. I've got a pretty good, I'd say, description of content in the pipeline. We're stabilized in a lot of different areas. We're still really learning to work better as a team behind the scenes. It's hard, you know. It's like for example, one of the biggest things that is different with me is that I don't do the monthly reviews. I don't do guaranteed roadmaps, and I draw ambiguity to timeframes, right? But what you do get in replace is like, oh, Mod Warden showing up, something's happening, right? He usually stands behind something, or he's going to tell us about something. And that's just a very, very different way of working. It's hard for the team when they're used to one way of doing things, and a new guy comes along, and he wants to do it differently. And I'd say I don't have it all figured out, but this is why I like to work.
Yeah, I mean, you're dealing with a ship that has you know 20 years of legacy behind it, and I can only imagine the inertia you got with something on that front. So.
But it's in all honesty, it's a lot of fun. I have a lot of day-to-day gratification. I probably work, my wife will kill me for saying this, but I probably work, you know, 7 days a week. Like, I always have one eye on the business, you know, even when I take a day off, the team knows that I try and save the team from another note on Slack or email from Ryan, you know. But I always have.
I know I sent you an email and you responded on Christmas Eve through the Mod Warden email box.
Oh gosh! Wow, gosh! Actually, I'd say that's a thing I've been horrible about is emails overall. But yeah, I remember that now. I was working. I didn't even get out of the office very early, and that was Christmas Eve. And actually, you know, right after that, I took my daughter. Say they flew in from the U.S. and we went and watched Star Wars movie Christmas Eve in Leicester Square. So now it all comes together. I remember that now.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Mod Warden, I just listened to what you were saying. Something just keeps coming in my head. And do you ever feel like you're kind of like a head coach, like the head coach of a team? Because I'm noticing so many similarities with that. And
I would probably say I'm definitely more of a coaching mentality. Actually, I'm a big fan of the Ted Lasso TV show. I'd probably say I think I identify with Ted Lasso quite a bit. I'm this kind of goofy, optimistic Canadian dude. You know, there's probably a lesson in everything. I probably ramble on just as much as he does. But I would say I'm more of a coaching personality than anything.
And, you know, with that guidance, it's something that I think the players need. It's something that your team needs. And, you know, in general, I hope we all come out ahead on this. So if you could just describe your first year here at Jagex in one word, what would that be?
I would say exhausting fun. So hard work. I'm regularly tired and exhausted, but I'm having a lot of fun. I wouldn't have come to Jagex and work with the RuneScape team if I didn't think that was going to be the case. But I'm having so much fun, and it's like, wow, first year just kind of went by overnight. It felt like that's a good sign. Well past the honeymoon periods of starting a new job, but I have a lot of fun in my day to day.
As we move on and we just finished talking about your first year as executive producer, we're going to talk about some strategic vision later on. But first, we're going to have a look at what the release cycle for 2021 and beyond looks like first. But before we do that, I'll just take a moment to thank our Patreon supporters for this episode, because, you know, this is something that we could not do our shows without the support of our listeners. So for this episode, I'd like to thank Andrew C., Brock H., Cameron, CGB900, Christian S., Danny W., Diana, Duramax, Jade Gizmo, JW, James W., Jason S., Joe M., John P., Kyle, Mr. Ling, Nora, Rastafa, Samantha R., Stubby, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., and Zant. Thank you for all of your support. It truly does mean the world to us. And if you're wondering what this is all about, you can check it out at patreon.com/RSBNB. That's where you can support the podcast if you so choose to. For as little as $1 a month, you'll gain access to the entire back catalog of Monthly Bits, our special month-end bonus show. You'll get early access to show notes, and you'll help fund the costs for hosting and production of RSBNB Update. That's all for as little as $1 a month. If you want to go up to $3 a month, you'll get access to a special VIP rank on Discord, a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, and access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the podcast. For $5 a month, you'll get a shout-out each and every week on the podcast. This is our insider tier, and you'll gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use for the clip show at the end of the year, and there just might be some from pre-show on this episode, so stay tuned for that. And of course, packaged with all of this is our monthly bit bonus show, our monthly round table, the inside RSBNB update, blog post that goes live at the start of the month, and of course, movie night. And if this sounds all interesting to you, you can check it out and learn more at patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks so much, everyone. Now, you know, we also, of course, want to talk about the heavy-hitting subjects, and you've mentioned time and time again that you need to always back up your words with action, and you need to deliver in order to get people to come on your side and whatnot. And recently, on one of your live stream appearances, you revealed that, of course, RuneScape is moving towards the monthly content release cycle. And honestly, we've been everywhere in the last 5 years, from the weekly updates to expansions. We've had content droughts, and, you know, it's felt as though sometimes there's not a single strategy. So can you recap for those who may not have heard, why exactly did you choose this monthly content release model?
Yeah, it was more certainty. I saw actually a more certainty and flexibility in what we're doing. Like, for us to deliver a more of a monthly content cycle, what I'm trying to achieve here, I'll kind of frame it that way. What I'm trying to achieve is a good reason where you kind of take a look at, am I getting enough value out of playing RuneScape? Is there enough in front of me? And right, will it be there next month? Right. So rather than kind of taking that more unpredictable route with a larger, we call them tent poles, sorry for all the business terms, but we call them tent poles, right? So if there is like, here's this really, really big thing, really, really hard to deliver, and uncertainty in dates because of the complexity of that, well, let's be a little more pragmatic with that. Let's not bite off more than we can chew. Let's do it at a more frequent case, and let's build redundancy in how we do the monthly content development, right? So, you know, for us to do, when we started leading with things like, you know, after Desperate Measures, going into the D&Ds, right? Going in the D&Ds kind of was the start of that plan, and I kind of said we're going to start it small, but we think this is really fun. We all of a sudden spun up multiple teams behind the scenes rather than a couple large teams. So we got smaller teams working in parallel, right? One of the first objectives that was with that is like, okay, while we try and figure this out, we need to ensure that we have the content. So let's build some redundancy in having multiple teams creating content.
Right? And that was going to be my next question. Why multiple teams rather than having only a handful focusing on certain pieces of content? And I guess you could call that redundancy?
Yeah, I would say it's building some redundancy in it, in how we get there. And with that, it's like, for example, you kind of hedge your bets across multiple initiatives. So if one starts sliding on timeline, you can say, that's okay, because we have this other one that is actually a little closer in alignment. Let's shift it a little bit, right? So rather than put my whole roadmap in front of the players, I need a little flexibility so I can be a little more certain in delivering content. And that's the other reason why I don't put a whole monthly roadmap out there. But when we shifted with this end of year or mid-year change, when I came on the live stream the first time, I was like, hey, this is looking green. This is looking green. This is looking green. I think it's fair that we talk to players about this.
Right.
And it was starting to work out that way. So when we start looking at the longer term, I want some more medium and larger headlines to come into play so that when a player looks at the whole of the month, they might say, oh, there is a small drop here and a large drop 3 weeks later, all in the same month, right?
And for just comparison, can you tell the players what exactly you see as medium and large? Because I know we've had different definitions of that over time. I personally would call archaeology extra large.
Yeah, XL archaeology definitely an XL. Like we teeter with like an Elder God War dungeon, right? 3 that would be like, you know, large XL level of content. We kind of look at it in kind of like large frames of reference. So maybe a small would be like 1 to 3 months. A medium might be like 1 to 3 months of development time. A medium might be, you know, like maybe 2 to 4, 2 to 6 in some cases. An XL starts looking at like 6+ months of, a large looks like 6+ months of development, right?
Right.
You know, we've got some of our bosses that might have taken us a year. So that could be like a large level bossing effort versus actually with some efficiencies on our pipeline and how we kind of get through the planning and design phases. We actually can deliver a boss within like maybe 4 to 6 months of development now. But those will have different scales, right?
Right. And so that would be effectively moving it down to the medium large scale then. Okay.
Exactly. That's right. You know, we could look at, let's say, a skilling update, like we announced the skilling update for construction. You know, we could have taken a construction rework path, or we could have, and that would have taken, you know, much, much longer time. It's something that we're really wanting to do at some point.
Yeah. Are you familiar with how they launched construction back in 2006?
No, actually, give me the breakdown. I'd love to hear it.
This was back when month-to-month behind-the-scenes posts were happening at the very tail end of May 2006, or was it 2005, Tannis? Was it 6 or 5 for construction? I can't remember which year it was. But at the end of the news post for that behind the scenes, they said at the month we will be bringing out Clockwork Cats, teleport tablets, and chairs that you can sit in. And that was the tease for the construction skill, because all of those things, of course, were made in your player-owned house. And, you know, we open up the RuneScape webpage one Monday late in May of 2006, and lo and behold, the construction skill is there.
Oh, wow.
So that's how that skill was announced.
And then you opened it a day later and found out there was a major bug that killed everybody in the game that was in a certain area. No.
So it's just boom.
it let people kill people where they weren't supposed to.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, like the other thing with the content strategy and coming up something a little more periodic, right? Like, imagine if we put all of our eggs into one large update or two large updates a year with some interspersed thingamabobs in between with the weekly releases, right? What if you didn't care about that thing, right? All of a sudden, it's like, wow, now you have to wait for another big beat.
I think
right?
you're talking about what was tried with expansions.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, like also, like I looked at, and it's like a lot of people did this like work for me on the team. But one of the things I had asked was like, give me the history and breakdown of all the different types of ways we tried to release content. And of course, yeah, we did the expansion level pieces. We did some of the smaller mediums. Like we even had a regular period of time where we released content fairly predictably. And then, you know, sometimes we just focus on XL stuff and other times just really, really small things. And we've never been able to do all of that all in one go, right? And I'd actually say we're still not able to do small, medium, large, and XL all in one go. But I want to move us into that direction. And what we're seeing now is the traction we're gaining for this. But for me to get those larger elements on the place, I've got to build some new teams for it. I've got to make some pitches for what I want to do or right. what the team wants to make in these spaces, right? Then I've got to get, you know, the other part of me working as an EP is you know managing and chatting upwards with my SVP and mod pips and so on and bringing them along on that journey and making sure that there's a solid case and ground for it. I don't want to operate a reckless business that just spends yeah. or whatever. I want to invest in the right ways, right? Because I want it sustainable at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's very, very important. Yeah. And, you yeah. know, this strategy is obviously going to be backed up with the Ninja Strikes, as we've talked about, the time-limited events, like the recent Traveling yeah. Artisan and Yak Tracks.
So you got Halloween coming.
Halloween, and Christmas.
Yeah, you know, the TLEs, the time-limited events, especially like the more seasonal stuff, like, you know, like Christmas and Halloween, you know, this is kind of an interesting spot in the game industry, right? Because all the other games are doing events in this area. This is also where you're kind of competing for eyeballs.
Right.
But what's great about it is that it's holiday time and yep. for people. And, you know, there's elements of pop culture that makes its way in there and so on. And it's like, I think we can do better in this yeah. this area. And so... Yeah,
and Christmas and Halloween are some of the times in RuneScape that have my best personal memories of just, you know, the friendships and the communities with that. And, you know, it's just so wonderful that they're going to be invested in. Because I know on the recent live stream, you also said that you're going to bring them forward with some regularity to them and iterate yes. on what.
Look, I wouldn't want a future year to go by like, are we going to get a Halloween event this year or not? It's right. like, hell yeah, we're always going to do Halloween events, right? That's what I want to make sure we can do. And you know, like a year from this Halloween, I like to make sure that we even knock it out of the park even better than this year and continually improve on that, right? Like I just want things to look like and see that they're getting better and better. And it's like, the reasons to believe are because we executed, we promised, we took the feedback, we'd take it in the next year, the next event. Like there would be no reason why we couldn't start the 2021 Halloween event and like start developing in the for first quarter next year, because it's now on a roadmap. It's going to be something we're doing. What we can plan for, we can put more value into it. We get a little more runway. All of the other teams that we work with, we're not just kind of bumping up against the 11th hour trying to localize the game or do a copy edit pass or get a piece of key art, that we can actually plan for this a lot more. So that's the stuff you guys don't get to see behind the scenes. We're getting more runway to plan, which means we get to talk about what we're doing in other ways as well.
And that's so very important, because the next thing I want to ask on. Okay, go ahead, Tannis.
Just 1 second. Sure. I just want to mention this because Mod Warden just touched on it, and I think it's really important with our community especially. But building trust with the RuneScape community, I think starts with consistent quality updates. And that's where we're moving. And I think – and you've caught it. Like you've caught it at different times. Now, you know, of course, we had the COVID stuff and we had the little bit of a drought there, but I have noticed that over the course of a year that you're racking up consistent kind of wins. You're consistently putting points on the board. And I think that's how you reach the RuneScape community, because that is what you will see on certain forum places that people are complaining about the most. Like the absolute most is always to do with bugs and lack of content. Once those things are addressed, I think you're going to have a lot of trust with the players.
Yeah, it's like usually like when I've interviewed for a job in the game industry, it's like I usually get to the point of I love putting smiles on players' faces, right? That would be like the ultimate gratification for me. Don't care about anything else. I just want to see the smile, right? Not always able to nail it, obviously, but that's what I'm shooting for. That's what I talk to the team about. I know they want to do that more and more than ever. And it's like I would say like the development team is super cool, super awesome. They're a lot of fun to work with, and it's not just things that I'm bringing, right? I'm coaching, I'm leading. I have to, you know, move us into a certain direction, or sometimes I don't have all the answers, right? And sometimes we're going to be testing some things out, but they really love making RuneScape. You know, we have very low turnaround in employees at JAGX. That means something, because they're working on something they really, really believe in. They don't want to ever see disappear.
And right? One thing I've seen with your studio is that you guys have a huge proportion of employees who actually play the game, which is something you don't really see in many other game studios.
Yeah, it's all over the place, really. It's like you know, coming before JAGX was over at Blizzard, and I worked on Overwatch, right? So it's like I played a lot of Overwatch. I played a lot of Overwatch even before I joined Blizzard. It's not always going to be the case, though, right? And not every game is the right game for everyone to drive enjoyment. Like, there'd be no reason why I would expect the entirety of the RuneScape team to be like their only game that they ever play.
Right?
I want them playing other things. I want them to see what the landscape looks like. I can totally imagine, you know, it's like when I was working on Mass Effect, you know, day in and day out, you're doing the daily play tests and so on. It does become wearing on you, right? So it's hard to find that day-to-day enjoyment sometimes, right? Because you're just going through so much of it.
And
that's the reality of game development. But one of the things I am looking for us to be doing is doing more play tests as a team, reviewing content as a team. So we meet as a team every 2 weeks. We call it a sprint review. Our sprint comprises of 2 weeks of development. And every other Wednesday, we spend the first half of the day reviewing all of the work as a team, whether you're in the live ops team, the episodic team, the core experience team, and mobile and so on. We've now framed it as we did a little bit of a narrative in the beginning, and we get some of the product leaders to talk about the direction and boom, boom, boom. And so we do that every couple of weeks. One of the areas that we could improve on more is a daily playtest mentality. But it's a hard thing to bring into any development team, is getting to the point where it's like you can play test as a team every day at this specific hour. But I'd like to try and get there. Well, it's a hard goal to try and achieve.
All right. And, you know, this has all been, of course, we've been talking about the content model going forward with that. And this is something that players are going to need to see consistency of. And I guess this is a big question here. Can you commit to carrying this model through 2021?
Yeah, it's our plan for 2021. I would say where the difference in it is I want to scale it better, right? So I've painted a content vision in the form of here's what the heartbeats look like. So imagine that, and maybe I'll share an image with you guys to kind of articulate this point, right?
We'll put this in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. Yeah.
So kind of, you know, like those, what do they call them? The piano rolls, where you see the colored notes, kind of going by as the, I don't know what it's called, the spindle and the little metal thing that pops over the note. Like, to me, that's like a running heartbeat, right? And so I want to continue to scale up the number of teams that I have, building small, medium, and large content. The predictability that you'll see is you know, a headline item. I like to get a secondary headline item and maybe a tertiary item. And I want, so I kind of frame this as, this is what we're working towards. It's not going to be there in January, but we're going to continue working more in this direction. And for me to be able to do that is that, like, instead of having one or two smaller teams working on things, that maybe I've got three or four smaller teams and maybe two or three mediums, maybe a couple large teams.
Right.
So then kind of building in this scale and redundancy into our plan so that we can shift if we have to, and the player doesn't get the impact of it the way that we build for it. And we're still going to see quarterly Yak Tracks. We're going to see continued experiments in our commercial space, or, you know, how we're looking at Treasure Hunter promos and other things that we want to experiment with. And we're still going to do the DXP live events. There's still going to be the four events that we have in plan. I don't have any plans right now to increase them. We're pretty happy with four.
Good to know.
Yep. And actually, that's actually a pretty important piece for another segment of our players, are those DXP live events, and we've taken a lot of feedback over the last year, and we tried a lot of new things, and I think they've been very positive in general there. Let's see, we're still going to have a ninja cadence. We're shooting for a ninja drop every 2 weeks.
So two a month.
Yeah, two a month. And now when he's, and then the, you know, time limited events, you know, the Halloween, the Christmas, and we'll continue to build that out. It's like we had a really good showing with our summer event, the beach this year, when we were kind of first looking at it. It's like, I think we had mixed reactions with it.
Yeah.
But the overwhelming player feedback, and when we actually looked at this, it's like, wow. This was a really, really engaging event. Great. Well, let's note and learn from what we can do this year. How's it going to carry into next year? So, like, well, we'll probably do another iteration of the beach or something like it in the same time frame. But tell us that's a summer event, right?
Right. So then you have summer, Halloween, winter, and now I guess all that's missing is probably something in spring that would be time limited like that.
Exactly.
Now, oh, sorry. Go. Okay. You say you're not a roadmap person. You've been very, very clear about that. And, you know, we come from an era in the past where we had week to week update videos, month to month update behind the scenes videos. Now, many people, when they see this, when they see the new warden in town, so to speak, with this, we need to see, they want to see effectively a new level of accountability brought forward. These players need to be convinced that this strategy will work and won't be abandoned after 6 months in time. So to you, is that a question where it's either you prove yourself through regular content delivery and being on time as expected, or is there something else that factors into that as well?
Before I answer that, I'd kind of want to ask you, what does accountability in this form look like to you typically?
Well, it would be in the same vein of, say, okay, we come out on a live stream or we put out a dev blog on a piece of content. This content is either late or it doesn't tick all the boxes that were promised, or it's, you know, in the same vein as something like the mining and smithing rework was, where it's promised at a RuneFest and then it gets dragged out years. Are we going to be in a situation where we're not going to do that, either by you holding the cards closer to your chest and not talking about it until it's ready, or is there going to be something else associated with that that you can do?
Try and answer this in a few different ways. I think one of the things the community maybe did like is we had things like the month ahead, right? I'm not so keen sometimes on the month ahead in that format. One, it took a lot of effort for us to produce, where we're not always making the game, right? Because we're trying to produce this piece of content. So whatever we do, it needs to kind of scale, right? I've chatted with the team about looking at some different formats for this. I'd say I don't have a solution in place. So like, hey, this is our path forward. We'll probably have to experiment in this in a little bit. So when I say that I'm not a roadmap person, it's not that I don't operate by roadmaps, and I have tons of roadmaps behind the scenes. I've got a roadmap that I work internally that's updated every week. What I'm not wanting to do is put all the cards on the table in a particular order, because likely that order, the delivery, the timing will change, right? So that's
and in doing so, point. You sow that yeah. doubt in the player community. Hence why it's important to fix that.
Exactly. Now, can I do better in trying to paint the picture? Well, I did bottle up a whole bunch of things that I was able to talk about. I can foresee us doing more moments like that, right? So it's like maybe when I come on stream, I'm talking about the next couple months, because the next couple months look really clear to me. I don't see that they're changing. Or that we have high confidence in delivery, right? Another indication of accountability would be, I don't want to be like, hey, we were supposed to release something today, and you all of a sudden get it's like, hey, sorry, we didn't release something today that you were expecting, right? So I would rather be that person that gets ahead of it a couple months ahead and say, if we'd say, hey, we're going to put something out 4 months from now, and maybe at that moment it was very clear that it was, let's say, what we call green on our day-to-day, and all of a sudden, for some unforeseen circumstances or poor planning or something, it's actually a red item and we can't deliver that thing, right? Well, what I'd be working with the team, so, well, what are we putting in its place then, right? So rather than deliver nothing, what can we come to the table with? Let's talk to the community and say, hey, we had to make a change. This thing wasn't ready where it was. We want to stand on quality, but we still want to deliver some value. So rather than just take away, I like to say, this is what I can give. And likewise, that was the exact same conversation we had about archaeology and Warriors Retreat. It's like, I didn't want to take this away, but I wanted to frame it. It's like, no, we make this decision for the right reasons. It's the best thing for the product, best thing for the players. But this is also something we could give.
Right. And you also touched on how you could have potentially delayed farming and herb lore as well in that same vein.
Yeah, in the same vein, right? And then I would actually say, like, over the course of 2019, I'd say one of the player favorites of our content was actually the bank rework, right? Yep. That was a huge thing. What I think we didn't do very well is how we framed it and talked about it, because it kind of came in and it didn't get a lot of shine, but there was a lot of really hard work put into that.
Yeah.
And the players loved it.
And right? That's what we said too. I mean, at the time, you remember this, Tanis, we said, why aren't they calling this the bank rework when it's quite clearly a bank rework? Instead, it was just a bank improvements.
But again, that's an example of an awesome headliner, right? And I didn't have our new product marketing person in place yet. We had already worked out that we were going to hire this person, but he couldn't get here until January. And then this was the other thing why archaeology was awesome, is I got to have the new product marketing head, his name's David. He joined us in January, and he made a tremendous impact on the archaeology launch for us. We did some reworking of the logo, of the archaeology logo, and the key art that went into that. We actually dropped some Easter eggs in there with Zeros in the background. Yeah. And I don't know if people picked up on the tattoo or the design on the pedestal, but like, these were things when we start talking about narrative and creative briefs, it's like, no, let's take a step back. So we actually did some rework on our creative and narrative in the same way.
I caught on to that.
And it's like when I was looking at, wow, this is amazing. We put out 50 releases. I actually don't think we do the best job kind of framing it, titling it, clarifying it. So you probably see, like, even our release notes formatting that we have was to help with this, because we, rather than just be a bunch of random bullet items in the way sometimes we wrote them, we're trying to think a little bit on better on how we communicate things and group things together, create themes and the like. So,
yeah. Okay. That's wonderful to hear. And, you know, I hope looking at this that the players who are skeptical will see what has happened over the last year and move forward with that. And as we develop this new cadence moving into 2021, come to have an appreciation for that. But if there's anybody who's, you know, disillusioned or just wants to be skeptical, why should they believe you when it comes to cadence and update release cycles going into 2021?
Well, hopefully the proof will be in the pudding, right? That's, again, that's a pragmatic answer. I trust that we're going to be delivering to that, and I hope that at the end of the year, you can kind of reflect on and say how much, you know, did they say they were going to do, and what did they actually deliver? Maybe that's one way of looking at it, but. Gosh, why should you trust us? Well, I think the things that I've said already, even with the mid-year changes, are coming to fruition, and we still have more time to run out. So maybe we can chat again at the end of the year and see where it lands.
All right, we'll make a note of that and see where we're at. Yeah. Now, of course, you know, any game in this day and age always has an interesting monetization model, whether, you know, be something like Overwatch or Fortnite, or, you know, pick any game on the shelf. And RuneScape is no exception to this, because, you know, we often have cases of, you know, there's a financial report released, or there's some sort of news report about loot boxes, even if it's not touching on RuneScape, and I need to underscore that. Or even just, you know, some kind of microtransaction update in our game, whether it be the purchase out for a time-limited event or a new Treasure Hunter promo. And players are always going to question if it's too much. And this is actually a really interesting question here. How do you get that right balance between microtransactions and not? How do you strike that balance?
Well, I'll give a little kind of preamble here. I've been fortunate to join the game industry, and I've got to try and define a lot of different business models in the game. So when I got started, it was all about the premium box model, right? Making console games, you go to the store, you pay $59.99, boom, 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 right? And at that time, the extended revenue also came in the form of, it's like, this was kind of like some of the emergence of almost like a live game model, if you think about it. And yeah, it started off with a commercial perspective. But if you look like a game of Mass Effect, and this is pretty much the same for any console game, most of the revenue is gathered in the first 60 to 90 days on a console game. And that's where it's kind of like this hockey stick look when you look at the data. Right now, anything beyond that, it's kind of like all the activity falls off, the income for the game falls off. It's like you're done, you're spent, you're done. Move on to the next game. So the sort of countering it with premium DLC, right? And then everyone started freaking about DLC. You're trying to get more money in the game. You're carving part of the game out just so you can commercialize it. And I think for some companies that was the case, but for the bulk of the game studios, they were trying to, like, actually, we want to change the shape of the hockey stick. We want to change the shape of engagement. We can put this premium DLC out. You know, it's like the bigger publishers, the Activisions and EAs and so on, would do this roughly about every quarter, or you do two or three a year. And that kind of involved in things like the online pass. And it's kind of like the subscription buy now, and you get all these different elements.
Right.
And then couple years go by, we also now start venturing into the free-to-play world, and the economics for free-to-play to really work is based off of microtransactions, right? And then you've got some games that have subscription models and additional things to monetize and so on, right? The reason why we have all these different avenues is that it costs more to make a game than anybody can possibly imagine. And again, there is a cost exercise in here. It's hard to, like, do we need to ask for hundreds of dollars up front for all the economics to make sense for a game. No, that it just doesn't work that way. People don't have that.
People don't want to spend that on a game.
That's right. And then also on the free-to-play side of things, the economics, you need a massive volume of player. You need like 5 million, 10 million DAU or MAU, sorry, to really have a sustainable, healthy, economically positive...
Monthly average users, I'm guessing.
Yeah, monthly average users. Sorry about that. And it's like, so that there's a set of economics that work for that. And not everybody can be the Fortnites of the world or the CSGOs of the world and so on. Right. And so this is one of the reasons why we kind of look at like, okay, we got to try and do something here to kind of make it all work. And we want to keep making content. And then the other part of the story is this content, period of content delivery, right. When we were trying to figure out the live game model and change the shape of the hockey stick and the engagement perspective, this is where it's like, oh, okay, well, maybe we do expansions, maybe we do blah 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 blah, and so on. So I think in past streams we talked about that subscription alone isn't just everything that we need to make a healthy game, right? And so what we try and do in the backside is, you know, we're not in the form of just trying to gouge. Like, I'm not looking at how do I get another $2 or £3 out of someone. That's not what we do. What we look at is we look at the averages and the means and where we lie against industry benchmarks. And we fall a line in those industry benchmarks. And we look at it ourselves and we, you know, we try not to develop mechanics that would imbalance us in some way. And maybe we haven't done good on some of them, but I would say we're not trying to go in that direction. Sometimes we just make mistakes or the model was incorrect or something is broken about it.
Or it could be the advertising maybe.
Or timing. And you know, sometimes these things just don't work. Like, you know, and that's why we've also upped our game on our experiments in what we're doing. But we're doing that, right? So it's not all about Treasure Hunter at the end of the day. The things that we said we are changing about Treasure Hunter, right, is like, I don't want it to be a loot box, flat out. I just don't want it to be a loot box, right? I want the blind chance aspect to not be there. That's not what we want to do as a game, right?
And this is something I was actually going to ask at the later on in this segment, and I'm not going to ask for a timeline on this because I don't think it's realistic, but can you commit to removing loot boxes or at least the chance-based mechanics from RuneScape microtransactions?
Yeah, I want to remove the blind chance aspect of it. I want it to be transparent. I want the odds, you know, if we have odds even, right? And I don't even know if we'll stick with us as a content plan in the long term. We actually find other experiments that are actually better, right? Things that you might see from us. We might want to try out direct purchase, where it's like, hey, what if we just let people just spend cash, right, to buy something that they want? Is there any harm in that? And it's like, we'll probably want to experiment with that a little bit.
Tanis, right? how do you and your high-end XP skilling community feel about that? Because I know we've talked about that before.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty firm believer that that's the way it should be anyway. We're not getting rid of microtransactions, so I think you should get what you pay for and know what you're paying for.
Exactly.
You know, so I don't think that... Now, as for, like, on a high-level skilling, look, here's a dirty little secret that maybe a lot of accomplished players aren't going to tell you. They all use bonus XP, okay? All of your 5.6 bill people, it is baked in the cake that half of that on certain skills is bonus XP, right? So, yes, will you hear people rant, rave, cry, rip their clothes, tear their hair out? Yeah, you will. But I don't put much into that because everybody is using it. And as long as there's an option that makes it so that you don't have to personally use it, I don't see anything wrong with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, we don't want to make mechanics or even like I also don't want things that aren't accessible to you just because you'd have to spend money to get it. So I like to find alternative ways for an economy to built around items that they're just always accessible to everybody. Right. I think we should take a harder look at that area as well. Yak Track is an interesting avenue as well, right?
All right. That's where I wanted to go next, so I'll let you continue on.
Yeah. So like, obviously, it's a battle pass system, right? I actually been experimenting with these systems for many, many years. One of the first things that I had done was something called the Cerberus Network on Mass Effect 2. Whereas trying to bring kind of like free content into play, unlocking certain times, boom, boom, boom. There was like a premium path to it. There was a free path and so on. And then even working on future games, there's, you know, a couple things that the public didn't get to see when I was working on some Star Wars games were actually kind of precursors and tests to this. And then Valve did the system as well. With Dota and CS:GO, and they do an amazing job at that. And then obviously, I spent some time at Epic. I had a lot of input and push into these systems in two different games. One being Paragon, which was a MOBA, and the other was Fortnite as well. And we, you know, simply looked at, you know, the best examples of this. And then there, you know, they're the ones where here's a really kind of like the very kind of basic paid way of doing things. But what we're trying to make Yak Track to be is kind of like an engaging content system that, yeah, there's a commercial component to it. But we also want it to be fun. We want it to be a narrative. We just don't want it to be basic. So we're going to continue working and evolving the system. Maybe one day, like we're not there yet, but maybe we can move away from some of the other things and just put more stock into Yak Track.
I would love that. And that same vein, one thing that you guys did that I thought was a really good idea was making all the Yak Track cosmetics purchasable after the event for oddments if you missed them. That was wonderful.
But it's like, this is where we're looking at kind of like the fear of missing out. And you know, the fear of missing out was also when we evolved DXP Live. That was also a big stressful point for players. Like, I can't do this weekend. Or it's like, for me to take advantage of everything, I have to play the next 48 hours and not eat and not, like, that's not healthy, right? And so we changed those mechanics up. And like, even to the point where it's like, gosh, what if we just gave them a toggle, turn it on and off when they wanted, right? So they have a little control over that. And like, we're not trying to be, you know, like over the top or predatory in these areas. It's just sometimes we're aloof, right? Sometimes we don't get it. Sometimes we haven't figured all the things out, or sometimes they're really hard to do with the systems that we have, but we have evolved them, right? And even like you were mentioning the bonus XP, right? The reality with the double XP elements, not everybody has the time to give, like,
and that's another consideration as well when it comes to microtransactions, whether you get the lamps from Treasure Hunter or at some point in the future you just buy them outright.
That's right. And so it's really a convenience thing, right? Like, you can accelerate things, you can still be part of the conversation. I get, you know, we have some really hardcore players and they want to be purists. Like, I love that too, right, about the game. But we don't. We try not to force it in any way. And we like to give you an option about it. But the reality is that players are highly, highly engaged in this. Now, I don't want to be over the top with it. I don't want to be in this area of it's like, oh no, let's just do it every weekend. And like, no, we're not going to do that. I think we can build up some demand and pent up activity, and players can maybe plan for it if they know that we're going to do for a year. Like these are things that I think are okay. And we're going to, I want to keep in, you know, improving the value. I just don't want it to be as a double XP event. In some ways, like, we're experimenting with some mechanics that no other double XP plays that I've seen are doing. Like, there's some interesting things happening in Call of Duty, of course.
Yeah.
But we're trying some new things, and we're going to continue to keep trying.
And RuneScape's always been an innovator on that, even on the free-to-play side of it. And, you know, with that, and we were just talking about YakTrak and Oddments. Could you see us moving to a future at some point, if it was popular enough, where cosmetic overrides in the YakTrak system are the primary form of monetization, kind of like you have in Overwatch? And yeah, you could...
Quite possibly, yes. And then I think what really helps players is, it's kind of an interesting thing, because when I think about RuneScape, there's a lot of depth to RuneScape, right? So if I saw that as a pillar, and I do believe that the deep and engaging depth is something unique about RuneScape, how do I ensure that it's there in a system like YakTrak, but at the same time, so that it's approachable and not a pain or a grind for people, right? Because I still want the system to try and be fun at the end of the day. But to answer your question, it's like, yeah, that could be one of our versions of reality here. But it's like, we model things out, we put tests in, we say, are we growing this? Is it declining? And so on. Like you know, even on the treasure hunter front, like. Like we even tried some new mechanics in with, like, say, crystal capsules, right? And then what we do behind the scenes, we look at, you know, the performance, the engagement. We even look in on the sentiment front, see if we're kind of moving some directions. But you know what? Long term, we might not even be down that path. And then the other thing is, like, what happens if the world gets bored with battle pass systems, or someone comes up with a new thing? I'd rather be on the side of trying to innovate in this area rather than kind of follow.
Copy and paste. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so it's like, if there are other things, like, I'd like to try and experiment with something we don't even know about yet, right? That's a possibility. And then the other kind of unique part of this is, when you start looking at bringing these systems and ways that people pay for playing, right? When you look at a global scale, that dynamic changes quite a bit. So, like, for example, you can look at the totality of the Middle East, for example, right? And this is a really kind of widespread area, and areas that I look at in the game industry. I've been looking at the Middle East for 4 years. There, I think, are 23-ish Arabic-speaking countries in there, but they really kind of follow into very different economic zones, right?
Right.
So would it be right of me to ask for the same amount of money from in one place where it's just the economics are completely different in the other? So I'd say, whatever we do, I'd like, again, for it to be approachable. And then mobile adds on another dynamic, right? So rather than us, you know, as PC or Mac players, right? Where we're getting to sit behind a desk, not everybody has that, but they have a mobile device. So you have to look at the economics even more different, because they get to test out a lot more games. They throw more games away. There's a lot more free to play.
And I'd imagine you'd even see a difference between the Apple users and the Android users in that.
Exactly. There are differences here. And so, like, you churn players very, very differently. So maybe I have to look at those economics even slightly different. And we are taking a look at all of this, and we do want the game to be a much more approachable global base game rather than the markets that we're strong in Europe and the US, of course, right?
All right. And, you know, one thing that has also, of course, been a question throughout this entire year, and all the questions about microtransactions and whatnot, has been the fate of Oddments, and whether or not that could become a currency that's used for purchasing, say, XP lamps or bonus XP. And with that, you purchase a sack of Oddments, and you can use that to buy your XP or bonus XP, for example. And maybe even you could earn Oddments in-game that way, and that would just be another way of removing blind chance, because I know that's something we've talked about before on the podcast.
Yeah, and also, like, look how many currencies we have in RuneScape, right?
Yeah.
I think it's overcomplicated. While I appreciate the depth, it's also very overcomplicated. So I'd actually say that we're actually looking at the totality of the currencies in the game. This is going to be a very long process to
work. Okay, so that's still being worked on, because I know Ahmad Mike talked about it at some point, but we really haven't heard much of an update.
Yeah, actually, I'll get him on and give you guys an update soon. And just, you know, I'm not sure how much we have to talk about this time, but I think it's worthwhile getting back on. But yeah, Ottomans is very, very unique in this area, right? But I think we can do something by simplifying and giving players smarter control over the currency that they have. And I think it can be some alternative ways to have a commercial path to the game.
All right. And, you know, I guess just wrapping up the segment, I think if we want one thing listeners to take away from this is that you have committed at – we don't have a timeline for it, but you have committed to removing chance-based mechanics and blind chance from the loot box
and what
system.
And what we're doing in the meantime, right? We did an experiment, a fairly quick turnaround experiment. You saw that, we had the glass case, right? That was kind of a little nod to transparency, right? Well, let's start off by showing players what's in the thing, right? And then it was about publishing drop rates, right? And other areas that we want to look at is in our overall duty of care view of this is what do we want to be known as? Where do we want to be? What do we give to tools for parents, right? We can look at other areas of building things into our account systems and give maybe parents some control over this as well, or other players even. But we can look at duty of care more holistically. And what I've chatted with the team about is like, okay, the world's also changing in this space. Like there are some really, really extreme areas where this is just, you know, kind of flat out gambling for people, right?
Yeah.
Rather than that being the reason why we want to change, that is not the reason why I want to change. It's just what we want to do is just like, this is just not a mechanic that we want to move forward with. Right. So I'd rather it be done on our terms in the best way possible with more healthier ways of playing the game. That's kind of our mission. And we actually, we're a really strong partner with the government here in the UK. And what we do with them is that we provide info about our industry and what, you know, kind of giving them all the context for what this space looks like. We also talk about our role and how we work and what our future looks like a little bit, and our approach and our attitude towards it. So that's what we also do in the background. And I think the world's going to see a lot of changes, and I totally hope the world changes for the better of gaming in this area.
That's wonderful to hear. And, you know, I think whenever we talk about microtransactions in a game, it's always seen as, you know, the folks in suits in a smoke-filled room saying, how can we get the most money out of the players in this day and age and whatnot?
It happens, you know, in some areas of our industry. Like I've seen it, right? But it's not the way I want to develop RuneScape, and it's not the way JGX wants us to develop RuneScape as well. So yeah.
All right, that's good to hear. Tanis, you have anything else on monetization or oddments that you want to get off your chest?
No, I mean I look forward to the day that we have one currency, and it's less confusing and just easier. I applaud you and your decision to try to get rid of chance-based mechanics. That's always been a pet peeve of mine. I don't necessarily have a problem with Treasure Hunter, but the chance-based stuff, I do, and I completely agree with you. Like, it just is not a mechanic that is.
Yeah, it's kind of odd, right? But like even me growing up as a kid. You know, I collected trading cards if I had, you know,
that's exactly what it is,
right? It's another version of that. You know, it's like, it's no different than a pack of Pokemon cards or baseball cards, Star Wars cards, right? And it, it's just manifested in a digital way. So I'd say they're the same thing in my mind. Maybe I'm old, but I think they're the same thing.
Yeah, and you know, one promo I think that went over really well, and I think we jumped all up and down about, and you know, we don't encourage people to spend in certain ways on the podcast. Yep. But the one week we did that was when you guys did the cat promo. I think it was the Meowsketeer, it was called. And this was the first time and the only time I've ever done this. I said, if you guys want to see more promos like this, this is your weekend to go out and buy Treasure Hunter keys. Mm-hmm. If you want to support that method.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, like, please vote with your wallet at the end of the day, or continuous giving us feedback. Please pat us on the back if we're doing something more well, you know, shout loudly, and where we're still sucking, right? But you know, just hopefully this gives a little peace of mind. We work on this all the time. You know, we've hired some new people to help us out in this area as well, and it just takes a long time for this to unfold. Like even doing like commercial simulation is a task in itself. Or how we balance the game, right? Like, you know, even some of the Ottomans challenges that we've had in recent days, you know, just right around balancing. Like, we had no idea that this promo and that promo would collide in such a way. It was such a weird edge case. Well, guess what? It's more edge case testing like that is now covered in our daily QA plans. Do I anticipate us making more mistakes in the future? Absolutely. We're not intending to. We don't have all areas covered, but
and the way I see it, making mistakes is human, and one of the best ways to learn is to make a mistake. You know, you have, for example, the case of the 15-year-old working at a grocery store, drops a carton of milk, assuming back in the old days they were glass, shatters the entire thing. Do you send the kid home and fire him? No, you use it as a learning experience and move forward.
It's funny that you bring that one up. I actually try and train myself a little bit to not even look if I'm present to that, because I can only imagine how that person feels and what they're going through. They don't all of a sudden need, you know, 800 eyeballs all of a sudden looking at you and make you feel like shit at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this, as we move forward, this is something that we need to talk about, because RuneScape's celebrating its 20th anniversary this coming July. I've been around personally since 2002, started in earnest in 2004. And with that, how do you approach something with that amount of legacy behind it? What is even one of the questions you ask when planning ahead?
Yeah. So, you know, like first out of the gate is like, how do you handle the birthday itself, right? The day that it happens, you know, 20th anniversary starting in January, I see this really as a year of celebration, right? So what I would foresee from us is, how are we celebrating this, the course of the year? Then there's, you know, January 4th, the day most people get back from work.
Yep.
Like we're talking about, what do we want to do on that day, right? How do we want to celebrate it with our community? And then there's kind of like, okay, now we talk about the year and looking at the bigger beats. You know, we try and figure out how to kind of bring some of the nostalgic elements forward, and kind of paying homage, but also trying to look forward in bigger ways too, right? Like, what could we possibly do to try and make a mark as a starting point for the next 20 years, right? So these are things we are discussing and taking a look at and planning. But those are the questions that go through my head and going through the team's head right now. And how much of this can we just carry completely throughout the year? It's a big moment. 20 years of the franchise, you know, all you guys love. We want to try and do something in the best way possible, that, right?
And just think of how many games don't get to that point. And, you know, with this, I'm reminded of a listener question that was sent in a few weeks back on the podcast. And it's been a longtime listener of our show. And they asked, you know, how would you like to celebrate with Jagex? And this was actually I think one of my favorite questions this year. You remember this one, Tanis?
Yeah, I do.
And we had such a fun time discussing this, just because this is a game that's so close to our hearts. And my answer at the time, like, let's just have a walk through RuneScape celebrating 20 years. Think of it as like a monument walk, for example. You know, you go to a park and you see monuments of 20 years. So I'm hoping we'll see something that will touch on that level of nostalgia when we get to January.
Yeah. I would say we're actively talking about it again. You know, it's like, I'd say we got a year ahead of us, but there's different phases of that, right? And again, starting, what do we do January 4th, and then how do we carry that throughout the course of the year? So I don't have a lot to tell you about that, but I can at least tell you that's our approach and trying to see how we think about the coming year.
All right. And, you know, with that, the player base of RuneScape, you know, I remember back in the day, we would see people as young as 8 or 9 playing. People have graduated to teenagers, become adults. Some of them are even having children now, Tanis, right? And with that, you know, there's always the question of what does the player base of RuneScape look like in terms of how well established are they? And I guess this leads to an interesting question. How do you expand the base? Because many people see it as, you know, just this collection of high, almost 2,000 level plus people. So how do you bring that new blood into the game 20 years on?
Yeah, it's a good question. Actually, great timing as well. Players have kind of poked around in the social space and community channels and so on. You know, like, hey, Jagex, hey, Mod Warden, what are you going to do about new blood? This is important to us, right? And little segue to this is one of the most awesome things I saw when we launched Archaeology on March 30th was the commentary around, wow, it's so nice seeing people in a higher population all at the same time. That was a really great feeling, right? And so you know, we've been working on a new blood strategy for quite some time, and it's actually going to be in multiple phases. I'll tell you today, and your listeners will probably already hear from it in another way. But we're actually going to be coming to Steam on October 14th, and that's going to be kind of like the first big moment for us. This is the first time bringing RuneScape outside of Jagex's ecosystem. So this is really the world's one of the world's largest MMORPGs being brought to the one of the most ultimate gaming destinations for gamers. That's huge for us.
And to quote a certain presidential candidate, that's a BFD.
That's right. That is right. And it's sort of like I'm excited and I about this. The team's really excited. We've been working on this for quite a while. You're going to see a little bit of a news post, and hopefully it doesn't sound too sappy. But this is a really kind of cool moment where we can bring RuneScape to another area where gamers are already existing. And I hope everyone welcomes them in. And this is going to be, you know, a number of activities and like this over the coming months and years that are focused on growing RuneScape. Mobile will likely be our next big growth beat. And we'll continue looking at the other platforms, other distribution areas. There's a lot of great options out there, right? And I really want to have a very, very open platform for players to come in. I'm not looking for like a walled off ecosystem or anything of that nature. And I want to kind of keep moving in this direction of just trying to bring RuneScape everywhere where we can in the most convenient way possible. So you can enjoy it more in the way that you like, in the more the way that you trust, because not everybody even knows about the game. A lot of new players just simply don't know about the game yet.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you know, this leads to many questions on this. I'm gonna start with some of the simple ones that you can probably answer straight off the bat. Steam is of course known for achievements. Yes, no.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And so well, much and, that.
Sorry, I'll let you continue. I'm just getting ahead of myself here because that's a big deal. But with these achievements, will they also be tied to the in-game achievement system?
Yes, you know, they will be tied into the existing achievements. Yes, and so we'll have Steam achievements. Not every game that on the Steam platform has them. We went all over this. We know that our players and we'd like to think that new players value achievements as well. So that's pretty cool. We're going to have the trading cards and other Steam native things that ecosystem is very familiar with. So we're going to be very well rounded in our Steam offering out of the gate. And we'd like to find ways for all of our players to experience that as well. But so yeah.
And you know, you say all of your players, and what I'm assuming is going to be the case, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, is that if you're a Windows user or a Mac user, you're not going to have to play through Steam. You can still go to RuneScape.com and get the client and play that way. Yeah. If you want.
Yeah, that's right. And so like there will be account linking. It'll still be a great cross-platform play experience. We're not going to segment our player bases in any way. We're just like hopefully one happy RuneScape universe, right? And so yeah.
And you know, I think that raises other questions. Could a future where RuneScape is on the Xbox in that case, because they're big on achievements as well, could that be a future? Or the Epic Game Store, for example?
Yeah, I see all of these as possibilities, right? So, you know, going to other platforms, the things that we try to solve for is what does the interaction design look like? How do you kind of take advantage of the best things that the platform can offer? Also, where are they in their platform cycle? Like, so we're about to hit into next gen console and so on. You know, it's like in some cases we might be at the forefront of that. In other cases, we might want to wait and see a little bit, right, to see what this is really looks like and how do we work with those platform features in the best way possible. You know, like making RuneScape on mobile is incredibly challenging and hard for us, right? We make our own game engine. It's not based on Unity or Unreal or some other off-the-shelf engine. We make our own engine, right? And so we're adapting that capability. And every time we look at a new platform, we have to look at adapting the game engine to that new platform.
Right.
So that we can try and give the best frame rates possible and you know, working with controllers very different than a mouse and keyboard, obviously, versus tapping on a hard screen. So those are all the pieces that we have to consider. I would say that, you know, an obvious look would be is seeing if we can eventually make it to the Epic Game Store as well. You know, obviously, that's another massive destination for gamers. But if we kind of look at what we're trying to do as a RuneScape team is go where it makes sense as well. We also want to make sure what we can do is doable. How does this stack up against all of our priorities, right? And then we'll look at the timing of it, and we're also building up capability as developers in each one of these areas. Like we just added the new Amazon login to our Twitch linking system, right? That's another piece of technology we did. We're now have some proficiency with the Steam account system and their platform.
And one thing I really appreciate is the sign in with Apple, because if you're getting iOS users after mobile launches, they're going to be able to click one button and start playing if they have a new account, which is perfect.
Exactly. And you try to make it as streamlined, as simple as possible, right? And so it's like, you know, as a strategy, I like to be everywhere that we can. I like to continue growing and reaching out to new different audiences, because there are so many gamers that were just never had the opportunity because they play differently, right? And this is kind of super super cool. But growth is in kind of like this new blood strategy is we're going to do this while we're delivering in all the other areas that we say that we're going to deliver in. And it's not going to be like, oh, you're focused over here. That means we're going to lose out in this area. It's like, no, we're growing in these other areas because we can, or that we have new staff to help us grow, or we have a means to do it in parallel. We're not going to fragment and take away from something else we're trying to achieve.
And that's so important in the modern ecosystem for any game and, you know, any platform. You don't want fragmentation on that. And, you know, it seems like this is all being planned ahead. And, you know, we talked a bit about this in the Cadence and release, but in relation to strategic vision.
You said the word. You said the word. I didn't say it.
Strategic vision?
No, the thing that means periodic release of content. Boom, boom, boom. Sorry, I'm teasing you because it's like the community wants me to stop using that word. So I worked really hard at it this podcast.
Okay, I will.
Really?
I will. And you know,
not know that.
And that's interesting because to me, I very much talk in those kind of words, and you know. Yeah. The C word is a natural word from that perspective, but that's interesting that the community feels that way. And perhaps that's because it hasn't been delivered on before.
Maybe.
So
and maybe I read too much into it as well, but I'm just trying to poke fun at myself.
Sure. Sure. And you know, any person in your position should do that because it creates a natural bond with your community. And you know, with strategic vision, we either weren't told about it or it didn't exist. So I guess the question is, how far ahead are you planning? 1 year, two, five, 10?
Yeah, I would say that it's like, you know, as a company, you know, we try and build, and this is pretty normal, so it's not unique to Jagex. We try and build 5-year plans, and you know, the longer you try and plan out, it gets harder and harder to be certain about it, right? And think about plans and roadmaps; they're always changing. And so at a company level, it's relatively normal to be looking at 5-year plans with the games that we have, the products that we have, and deeper into the roadmaps. Now, where I'm trying to get more and more time to transition to, so where you need your EP right now to be is looking at the future of RuneScape, not just in the content we're bringing out or the kind of tactical day-to-day.
Right.
So this is garnering more and more traction. It's like, okay, I'm making some shifts in this area. So this is where I'm spending more of my time trying to think about and discuss with the team. Realistically, what does that look like? I don't know yet, right? What I do know is that RuneScape is a game that is very deep and engaging. It's almost kind of timeless. It is probably even a trusted legacy that kind of gets passed on generation to generation.
Oh, I would fully agree with that.
Yeah. So the way I'm trying to approach this, right, is like I try and look into like in the natural wild, what does this look like? Maybe it's a little like Disneyland, right? Where there's a strong IP, strong brand, strong franchise. I'm not saying we're as big as Disney by any means, but maybe there's something that we can look to in that area, right? Some of the timeless components and some of the rich DNA are in some of the staple rides, right? Like Haunted Mansion or It's a Small World or Pirates of the Caribbean. But they still add little things here and there to kind of be little relevant and modern to the common day. And then I can go across, if I'm in Disneyland in California, I can go across the street to Adventureland, which is, you know, the biggest, latest roller coaster, but I also have access in core Disneyland things like Star Wars, right? And the, you know, the Galaxy Edge where you've got this whole new expression, or now you've got some of the other aspects of Marvel starting to come in, right? Maybe this is one way we can kind of look at this. What I'd love to do, and because we've already seen 20 years of RuneScape, is how do we make it even more trusted? How do we make it more timeless? The things that the players are sometimes tell us is that, you know, your game sometimes comes off as being an old game, right? So how do we make it a new game part of the conversation, right? And these aren't easy questions to answer either, right? But what I can say is that we're spending a lot more time looking at this right now. And this is where more of my time will be spent on, because I've got to kind of develop that vision and future for it. And then also, you know, technology changes, and that's an important aspect of it, right? It's like, should I be considering things like RTX technology, and would it even make sense for a game like RuneScape, right?
That's interesting, because we were actually just talking about that in our monthly bid. It was about the graphics of RuneScape 20 years. How exactly is this going to change? And we asked this odd question. Tannis, was it me or Xanth that asked that question about ray tracing on that?
Well, I think you asked a question, but Xanth had actually been working on that at work and had said he didn't see it coming to RuneScape.
Yeah, but these are things I can look at, right? And we have so many great, great examples, like even like RTX on Minecraft, pretty freaking amazing. Our RTX has come to even like the Fortnites of the world, right? And it's not like we should do what's best for RuneScape, but as we look at trying to create a better visual standard for the game, and you probably heard me mention that I've got a new art director in the team. That's going to help me address some of these things. And you know, certainly I know how much time you spend with the character avatar, right? And how much time you look at, you know, the back of your character and all the glory that's in the cape, right? These things are really important for us. Like, maybe we can be doing something more in these areas. How do we leverage the latest and greatest GPU technology,
right,
to help us out with that? And maybe I can leverage some of these partnerships and working with AMD and NVIDIA and a number of other partners to see what can we do in this area to kind of take it into the forefront of the discussion, rather than it being, it's like I'm not personally happy with, let's say, the quality of our Mac client today, right?
Oh, you touch a string.
Or what it doesn't mean that I don't care about, but I've got a higher expertise in this area in some cases, or deprioritize something else so I can focus on boosting up the Mac client.
Yeah, because,
right?
You know, some days it's like starting a lawnmower in the cold, where it takes 5 or 6 tries to actually get it going, and then you're playing along, and might just quit.
That's right. And it's like, you can get some of this data publicly. When you look at Steam's ecosystem, they'll tell you that, you know, 4 or 5% of their total monthly active users are Mac users, right? And another, I think, 1 to 2% are Linux users. Well, guess what? I have a Mac client and I have a Linux client. This is really important as part of our quality play. It's like, and how, when in our growth strategy, we got to take this stuff seriously, right? So like, maybe as we're looking towards the next 20 years, how do we develop our technology and work with the technology in new ways that are more sustainable, more beneficial to the player, and maybe us pushing the fantasy of the game in some new areas. Now, am I doing anything concrete today? No. So like, if you're worried about anything, I don't have anything that I can put in front of you that would indicate that.
Right.
But these are the questions we talk about frequently on the backside. And I've got even like some technology roadmap review even for next year. So there could be, here's what a longer term vision could look like, and the shorter term vision of that. So I don't know, give me some more time. It's still way too soon. But I would say where I need to be as an EP is more in that space than some of the tactical aspects that we're doing today.
That makes sense. So, you know, what you could effectively say here for the listeners is that the listeners effectively just got a glimpse at what some of your day-to-day discussions might look like going forward. And, you know, I think that's important to do, because not many people know what an executive producer does for RuneScape, and I didn't coming into this. So that's very good. And, you know, this all leads to a very personal question. And, you know, I ask this question because it's not to you as the executive producer, it's to you as the human being. What is RuneScape to you?
I led with that quote, right? I actually see RuneScape to me is a fantastic virtual world that is filled with citizens at the end of the day. And we all have interesting backgrounds and lives, but it's a place where we build up friendships and relationships in some case. Like we've even had a number of couples get together because of the game. And that's not just unique to RuneScape, but it's amazing to think about that, right? And then it's RuneScape is a place to escape, and it's quirky. It's not your standard game. It's like the alternative version of something.
It's got that right? very typical British bent to it sometimes as well.
It does. It definitely does. Right. And it's like, what do we do with that over the long term even? And so that's kind of cool, but it's also like, the unique thing about virtual worlds like this is that it can be very welcoming, approachable. And I did mention it as being this kind of like timeless legacy. But, you know, it's like even with the Grand Exchange, right? I've got economists that reach out to me all the time and say, hey, this thing that you have in game, a player-owned and player-driven economy, that's fantastic. What can we learn from this?
Yeah. And
the Grand Exchange is something very, very unique. There's not a lot of games. EVE Online has their marketplace as well, player driven. But there's aspects of this I personally find fascinating.
Yeah, and
reality.
We have an actual interesting story on this because you guys obviously publish the Grand Exchange prices on the website, and we keep track of those prices, and we have since the very beginning. And we were actually contacted by an economist doing a PhD who wanted to look at this data and use it in his research, and we gave that data. We haven't heard back yet on that, but it's definitely something that even we're aware of that people are looking at out there.
Yeah, I think we can kind of lean into this a little bit, right? And then another area to me, RuneScape has some interesting AFK qualities to it as well, right? And in some way, it's like it's kind of a second screen experience for some people, right? I find that very, very fascinating. And then it's this other place for mastery and achievement, right? Which is another kind of interesting aspect of it. You know, we talk about achievement and so on,
yeah.
or, you know, somebody's, yeah. you know, it's like, somebody's, bossing, let's say, Telos, and you're now they're at, you know, 4,000 in rage, you know, and, you know, to me, that is so, like somebody that would want to do that and spend the time trying to figure out how to do that is mind blowing to me. Like, I love this. Right. And then there's a cosplay quality, you know, to the game as well, and the expression and identity of characters. But the avatar is at the center of everything, right? We can't lose sight of that. The avatar is at the center of everything, and it's almost like a social app on top of that.
But, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
If I said anything that offends anyone, I'm not trying to. But again, this is what RuneScape currently means to me.
That's very good to hear. And, you know, you touched on achievement and mastery. And, you know, what's RuneScape's endgame? Do we all level up to 120s and 200 mils, or do we go bossing? Or is there something else that you see as the endgame for our characters?
Yeah, like one of the elements that, you know, I've have a lot of more discussions than ever on is this end game element. And I think there was some good discussion recently in the community on this as well. There's a lot of different ways we can look at it. We can like in a very kind of straightforward and maybe low hanging fruit way. I haven't talked to some of the game designers about this, so apologies if this feels like a blindside, but it's like prestiging for example is just like it's there. For players, if they want it, we just have to enable it. But I just don't want it to be a basic prestiging system either. I would like it to be cool and meaningful to players, right?
Yeah, we talked about doing something cosmetic with it, perhaps.
Exactly, right? But I want to find the RuneScape-y way of doing that if that's the direction we want to go in. But I talk to the team a lot about systems of this nature, and it's like we cannot create content quick enough for there to always be an end game in our normal frame of content. So how do we get out of the way of that? And you know, another way I am looking at towards the future is like, how could I enable players to be content creators, right? And could I potentially look at bringing a tool set to the game? Now that there's a whole lot of complexities in that, and for any company in that area. But I'd love to see players being content creators.
I just have my jaw drop with that, because you know that's something I never put two and two together with RuneScape. I'm already thinking of quests we could create.
I'm thinking of accessibility features left and right.
That's right. Right. And so that would be kind of interesting. And I think this is a very underrepresented, overlooked aspect of the game industry is letting players be content creators and involving them in different ways. Like easier said than done, right?
Because absolutely. I mentioned that absolutely.
We have a custom game engine, custom tool set. It's hard for us. RuneScript, that's right. It's even hard for us to make elements in the way that we want to. So I'd hate to put all of that burden and complexity in front of players as is, right? So if I was to move in this direction, I'd have to take a hard look of what that experience would actually look like, right? And maybe we test it out certain ways. I think we could look at offering different game modes and so on. Like one of the things I'm really, really fascinated by is Darkscape, right? Darkscape was a very, very interesting game mode that a lot of players really liked and enjoyed, right?
It was the silent horse, you know. It was out. People who enjoyed it really, really enjoyed it, but nobody really talked about it that much. So I can see that.
Yeah, it's like I found an old subreddit just for Darkscape. That was kind of interesting. But I would say like we should be looking at different ways to play RuneScape, and maybe we should test out some new game modes. But again, if we're going to do these kinds of things, I want to maintain what we say that we're trying to do and not upset that as well. So take this all a grain of salt, but my mind goes wild in the day to day.
And that's important to underscore. We're talking very, very pie in the sky, strategic kind of things right now that may never come to fruition. So we just need to underscore that for the community on that. And, you know, getting back to basics on this, how do you balance traditional RuneScape versus the feel of innovation and keeping up with modern design?
Well, that's a bit of a trap in some ways, because it's like, okay, who am I making RuneScape for, or who's RuneScape? Am I making it just for existing players? Like, no, I'm actually clearly saying that I want new players in the game, right? Well, those new players in the game have a lot of different other expectations of what is important to them, or how we value their time, or the different ways that they play now, right?
Or even how you interact with the game, for example.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And you know, so to me, like from a strategic point of view, I'd rather optimize for leisure time and kind of get out of the way of how you'd want one to play. And what I mean by that, it's like, no, it's on your time. If you're a mobile player and you go to school, you go to work, and you have 6 minutes here, 8 minutes there, maybe you have 20 minutes of lunch, well, that's most likely a mobile interaction. Does it have to be a one-to-one expression of what the game is? Doesn't have to be. So maybe we can lean a little more into that area of optimizing for that experience. Another way is that throughout the course of the day, you transition to your home, where you get to sit on a sofa, or what we call the 10-foot experience if you're a console player, or in your higher performing PC at desk experience, and you've got all your streaming gear. Again, I like to optimize for leisure time in these areas, And maybe you transition through these platforms throughout the course of the day.
Right.
Like RuneScape could be accessible to you in the not just accessible to you, but fun because you have leisure time throughout the day, right? So that's part of the balance thing to really kind of consider in all of that. And then we have players that have been with us for 20 years, right? So how do I give them what they care about as well? Right. So this is hard.
Yeah. Like
this is really, yeah. really, really hard. And this is where some of our more pointed discussions come in. You know, there's some folks that just love that they've played the game in most kind of hardcore way or in the way that they progress and it means something to them. Right. And then all of a sudden you introduce something else that means something different to somebody else. That's the hard part is how do you put smile on everyone's faces? And maybe this is where I can look again in the wild, look for natural looking examples of how people behave and react in there. I do know we have to evolve. We should always be evolving. We should always be improving. I don't want the game to stay stagnant. I don't want it to just be the way that you remembered it 20 years, but I also want to respect the journey and all the brains and content creators that contributed that and the feedback people gave that helped shape it, right?
Yeah. And with that, you know, someone makes a new account or they download the mobile app. We're 20 years in. What's the first thing you want them to see? And if they don't see that now, what do you want to change to make them see that?
Well, I talk about this with the team frequently. It's about the first impression. Like, I want the player to feel like they have a responsive game. I want them to believe that this is something that is part of a larger, wider community. I also want to solve some of the difficulty mountain in learning the game and that onboarding experience. We call it a FATUE or first time user experience. I'd like that to be very simple and get out of the way of you getting in. Like even as simple as something like an overcomplicated account creation process or character creation process can really churn players out quickly. Or if they feel it's like, oh, this is an old game, old people play it or whatever. That's what I have to focus on.
Or the graphics look dated. They look like they're from 2013, so to speak. And that sort of thing.
And our art style is very inconsistent throughout the game, right? We have, like even the user interfaces, we have more than 3,000 user interfaces in the game. That's not going to change overnight. We're not going to address all of those for a mobile launch, but I have to find the highest priority ones to make a good starting point. Right. And so like we've got some very capable people on the team with mobile backgrounds that are helping us understand where these areas that we have to address. And then it's the continuous improvement. So I want players to know that it just doesn't stop here. We're going to continuously improve this. We're going to look at the feedback. We gather obviously a lot of like crash reporting data. I want the game to feel stable. Right. That might mean I have to make some min spec calls, right? Just so that I can give you the frame rate. You know, it's like one of the things we're looking at is like what levels of Android versions that we need to support. And because it gets complicated.
Absolutely.
It's hard. But I don't want to alienate anybody intentionally, right? Like it's not what we're after. And so it's like trying to find the right balance of how do we make the game accessible to as many people as possible in the best way, but there are going to be some tough calls in doing that.
All right. And, you know, we're at pretty much at the end of our conversation here, and we're just going to wrap off with a bit of a philosophical question. What does the next 20 years of RuneScape look like? If you had one chance to lay this out right now, and granted planning for 1 year is difficult, but if you could just have one vision 20 years down the line, where's RuneScape at after 40 years?
After 40 years, oh gosh, maybe who knows, like maybe augmented reality VR is a thing, right? you know, the interesting tie-in for me is the idea of the virtual world. It's like we're having more discussions in the game industry and the entertainment industry around metaverses. I don't maybe RuneScape is a big component of a metaverse in some way. Very philosophical there, right? Better ways of expression and kind of being part of something bigger than you are. This is where you can nurture complex relationships and maybe feeling risk and loss and all of these other kind of behavioral elements that are tied to the human condition. These are the areas I think about in just entertainment in general. I don't know, maybe it's a lame answer, but I'm optimistic about something like that.
All right. And I'd say my biggest hope, and I think the thing that all of our listeners definitely want, is to hope that there will be a RuneScape in 20 years. Yeah. So, and you well, know, that's my minimum hope with that, because so much can change, so many things can happen, and, you know, very turbulent. So we hope it, for it the is. Best on that.
The game industry is fairly volatile, right?
Yeah.
And this is why I want, like, one of, you know, the objectives that I have in building the business for RuneScape is simply addressing that. It's not kidding. Like, we talk about how do we continue to make RuneScape for the next 20 years. And that means that it's got to have a good, responsible commercial route to it so that we can do that. That we have capability and skill to make content in fun and engaging ways. That we have a technology that helps us carry us forward. That we have the right tools and people to help drive that. And at the end of the day, the objective is to put a smile on somebody's face.
Excellent. Tannis, you have any questions before we give Mod Warden the pick of the week?
Not at this time, Shane. I'm just taking it all in, you know, thinking about the next 20 years.
Thinking
I'm
about
excited.
Where we've been, where we've come from.
Yeah.
And, you know, exactly. it's an adventure, because I think one of my favorite ways to look at RS personally is that it's not about the end goal. It's about the journey. And that journey is enhanced by your friends. It's enhanced by the content you play. And, you know, we've made so many friends over the years, and it's just such a privilege to be able to chat with you about this at this point in time. So
Yeah, I really, really appreciate it. You know, you said it really well. It is about the journey in the end. And again, it's like the human condition, right?
Yeah.
It is about the journey.
Yeah. So what do you have for pick of the week? And of course, this is the segment of the show where our hosts can share a book, movie, app, TV show, game, anything you've been up to currently that you want to share with the listeners.
Oh, gosh. Let's see. TV series I've been watching. I love Ted Lasso. I think it's a funny show. But I've come across Raised by Wolves, which is a Ridley Scott backed TV series. I think he even directed the first two episodes of it. But Raised by Wolves is fantastic. I'm gonna be honest in other areas, but I love this kind of universe that he keeps building upon. Very, very, very interesting. I love Raised by Wolves.
And from the jacket, Raised by Wolves centers around two androids, father and mother, tasked with raising human children on Kepler-22b after Earth was destroyed by a great war. So that's science fiction at its finest with that.
Oh my gosh, it's super quirky. Like, it's it's just really weird, odd. The pacing, sometimes it's a slow burn. It's not a very action-packed thing, but it's like, gives you enough time to kind of think between the moments again, you know, like, I love themes around the human condition. I try and read a lot of books in the space, and a few peers in the industry, we talk about a lot of similar things, and we kind of trade things back and forth that kind of make us think a little bit.
All right, that sounds good. Anything else before we wrap, Mod Warden?
I love that you guys, what you do for the RuneScape community, and just flat out, it's like, you guys have a really good positive attitude about things. Really appreciate that. I really appreciate you just giving us some time and coverage of the game, and I listen to you pretty frequently, actually, thank you for everything you do.
Wonderful. All right. And of course, if listeners want full show notes for this episode, you can find this at update.rsbnb.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast on any podcast listener out there, Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, practically anything, even YouTube. Just visit update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. You can also, of course, catch up with us on Twitter at RSBNB and our French chat, Bits Bytes In Game. So with that being said, we'll see you guys all for next week, another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.
See ya.
See ya.